3, 2, 1. Jeff DeBonis no longer works for the Forest Service. Now he spends all his time serving as president of the Association of Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics.
What's driving us and many other groups around the world is that presently our world is our society, our human species are not managing things on a sustainable basis. We don't have a sustainable energy policy. We don't have sustainable forestry practices. We're not sustainably harvesting in the oceans. You know, we're over-harvesting and over-utilizing everything. Every major ecosystem and biosphere on the planet is under stress because of unlimited demand and overpopulation and excessive resource extraction. We are not living on the biological interest anymore. We're eating into the capital. Our national forests are a microcosm of this worldwide problem of overutilization, overcutting, overharvesting, and sort of just succumbing to this insatiable increasing demand that we have not got a lid on.
In Alaska, the Tongass National Forest gets most of the attention. DeBonis says interior Alaska may not be feeling the pressure because the transportation system isn't in place here. He says it's just a matter of time before that happens.
You're in a situation now where you can control the development that is inevitably going to come here. As has happened in the lower 48, they cut through the northeast, they cut through the south, they cut through the Midwest, they're rapidly cutting through the northwest and the Rocky Mountains. And as you know, on the Tongass, you're in that same situation where overcutting has been occurring for a while. And it's only a matter of time before the economics and the scarcity and the increased demand get people up here looking at your forest resources for maybe just pulp or wafer board or whatever, but they'll be here eventually. So it's good to be aware at this point, start looking at the history of what's happened in other parts of the country and start preparing for this sort of a thing before it gets here.
DeBonis resigned from his job in February since he felt there is more potential to make changes through his association than in a low-level forest planning job. And in only a year and a half, he does think some things have changed.
The agency is now talking about the value of old-growth forests, which they didn't 2 years ago. They're talking about the need for ideological diversity of people speaking out within the agency, which they weren't talking about 2 years ago. They're talking about how the Forest Service does need to change, become a more environmentally sensitive, ecologically responsible organization. So there's awareness, there's a lot of talking. There is much more awareness within the agency. More and more people speaking out, agency management people giving lip service, at least, to these other resource values that they hadn't in the past, basically admitting that we haven't been possibly doing the best job that we should have been doing in the past in terms of public trust management.
DeBonis says his organization is trying to reach the public because the timber industry is good at propagandizing and putting out misinformation. The association now includes interested citizens and environmentalists, but DeBonis says he wants its emphasis to remain that of Forest Service employees trying to affect Forest Service policies. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Alaska's Clean Coal Plant would be one of many experimental plants in the nation. The technology includes what's called an advanced combustor. It removes oxides and sulfur dioxide from coal, allowing it to burn cleaner with less impact on air quality. Just what effect it will have on the air won't be known until the environmental impact statement is written. Healy and Fairbanks residents voiced their concerns about the environment earlier this week. Department of Energy senior environmental scientist Jerry Pell says the point of the meetings was to find out what the potential neighbors have to say.
So far there haven't been very many surprises. They're worried about air quality impacts, water quality impacts, impacts on the local population from the workforce that would be brought in to build the plant. They're interested about possible impacts on schools if there are going to be a lot of people brought into the community. We've had some concerns expressed about whether the project is really necessary.
One person who doesn't think it's necessary is Gary Newman. Newman attended the Fairbanks meeting to tell the department what he'll be watching for should the plant be built.
I'd like to see what they can do to reduce the CO2 output or at least mitigate the impacts from it through basically planting of new forests. the air quality impacts on Denali National Park is obviously a big one. Probably the biggest focus in my mind is that from the economic analyses that I've seen and from the load forecasting and all that, I don't see that we need the additional capacity that this 50 megawatt plant is going to produce. And in that line, I'd like to see if there are from an environmental impact statement that would address the additional impacts that we're going to be getting as a result of having to maintain this additional capacity.
A draft environmental impact statement will be out next summer. Jerry Pell says it should answer many of those questions.
It's in the writing of the EIS that we will look at the impacts and be able to address issues like just how much emission to the atmosphere the plant would cause, what the steps are that we'll take to reduce emissions, what the impacts might be from the workforce on local roads or on local housing requirements and what have you. So we're here to hear what the public has to say rather than provide answers, because at this juncture we're not in the position to give very many answers.
And the answer to the question, is the plant necessary, won't come from the Department of Energy. The Alaska Public Utilities Commission must first approve a contract for Golden Valley Electric Association to purchase power from the new plant. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton.
Former Governor Jay Hammond got on his soapbox to take the public, politicians, and the press to task. He says we've been talking about the wrong issues, that there's not a single candidate running for state office who can do very much about ANWR, subsistence, marijuana, or abortion. Yet those are the four issues that have dominated political discussion. In the last weeks of the campaign, Hammond wants to shift the political agenda to the issues that matter. And according to him, there are four of them.
Alaskans should be demanding clear answers on such questions as, if compelled to do so, after, of course, you've reduced government spending as much as you can, which would you do first, reimpose a state income tax or reduce permanent fund dividends? Number two, will you support legislation to limit legislative terms? And number three, how will you make sure that A, new economic development can pay its own way, and B, should it not, how can you possibly hold down government spending when each new non-taxed Alaskan coming up here to compete for the new jobs created by that development will cost the state thousands more dollars each year? And four, what in your budget plan will assure Alaskans that you'll provide the greatest protection for the permanent fund?
Hammond says he doesn't plan to endorse any candidate running for governor, but he did take note that so far only Democrat Tony Knowles was talking about reinstating an income tax if revenues fell below the level required to support basic state services. And Knowles has also said he would put windfall monies into the permanent fund.
Now, as a Republican, I'd like to vote for a Republican, if I could learn, in fact, just who was one. However, as an Alaskan, I have stated I would vote for that candidate who can assure me they will best protect, enhance, and defend the permanent fund. So I would hope that either Arliss or Wally get cracking. For to date, a Democrat seems to be out ahead of the pack.
Former Governor Jay Hammond denied rumors that he was so frustrated with the campaign that he would enter the race as a write-in candidate. In Anchorage, I'm Johanna Urich.
Unlike the POT initiative, the measure isn't glamorous, but Governor Cooper says it's one of the most important legislative actions that have been taken during the last 4 years. Cooper pointed to wide swings in oil prices, including an $8 per barrel drop in the last week, as evidence that the state needs a budget reserve.
That is a graphic show of what kind of stability that we have in the Alaska North Slope crude markets, on which 85% of our state revenues depend. Now, the situation cries out for some stability here.
To achieve that stability, Cooper wants voters to approve Proposition 3, which would create a separate fund that legislators could tap into when oil revenues don't meet projections. But to ensure that the fund isn't abused by legislators who overestimate state income, the amendment requires that if the fund is used in 1 year, it has to be paid back before legislators can increase future budgets. In the past, lawmakers have created budget reserves
only to raid them the next session. Cooper says if voters approve a constitutional amendment, legislators will be forced to sock away recent windfalls until the state really needs them.
It's something that is going to create some stability here. It means that when there is a sudden drop of oil prices, that the government won't have to self-destruct. Some people want it to self-destruct, and they tell you so. I don't think the majority of the people of Alaska want that to happen. So what you need here is some kind of backup.
Current plans call for the fund to be created from legal settlements made against oil companies. If okayed, the fund would get a $287 million jumpstart from the recently settled royalty suit with ARCO. Cooper says similar settlements could be designated by the legislature for use in the fund. In Anchorage, this is John McWhorter.
3-2-1. Former schoolteacher Betty Fahrenkamp has served 12 years in the state Senate. She wants to go back for at least four more. Trying to stop her is Joe Ryan, a Republican who has just finished serving 3 years on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. In campaign ads, Ryan has made recriminalization of marijuana an issue, pointing to Fahrenkamp's vote against recriminalization while in the legislature. But Fahrenkamp says she's willing to leave the matter up to voters and plans to vote yes on the ballot measure that will make possession of small amounts of marijuana subject to jail time and a fine.
I think there's a misunderstanding among a lot of people on whether or not it's legal to have marijuana on your person, anywhere, anytime. And it certainly isn't in any amounts. The only place today that it's legal is in your home. I'll be voting for the initiative. I think that we'll determine right after that, it will be determined whether or not that initiative will withstand the constitutional court case. And I'm disappointed when I hear, as I did twice in session, that it won't be enforced, so I hope we're not having an exercise in futility.
Ryan says he also plans to support the initiative.
Marijuana is a gateway drug. It doesn't send a good message to the kids. It's illegal under federal law, and we need to say that's it, we quit in Alaska. It's over. Marijuana is illegal. I'm not in great favor of putting people in jail. I'm a great proponent of whacking you for a $1,000 or $1,500 fine. It comes out of your hip pocket, and the law has the teeth in it to go and get that money from you. And the next time, well, perhaps 2,500, and the time after that, 5,000, until you learn. People understand that. 30 days in jail, no big deal.
Ryan also says he wants to change what he sees as inequities in the way the state funds education. He'd like to forward fund education for 1 year and thinks unexpected income from the recent increase in oil prices should be used to do that. Fahrenkamp supports putting that money in a budget reserve, another matter that voters will decide next week. Fahrenkamp and Ryan both say Denali Center would be a priority on the list of capital projects for the interior. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornson. 3-2-1. In about 10 days, voters will cast their ballots on the marijuana issue. Support of ballot measure number 2 would make possession of marijuana a criminal offense, punishable by up to 90 days in jail and a fine of as much as $1,000. The Assembly wants voters to approve the ballot measure, although Assemblymember Harold Gillum couldn't support it. Gillum says it gives police the authority to conduct a search without a warrant.
As far as the recriminalization of marijuana, I have no problem with that. When we start giving the police powers greater authority than they have right now, that's scary. I don't like that.
John Davies also objected, saying it's the third time he's been asked to vote on recriminalization. And Davies doesn't think much of the ballot question either.
I think that it has severe constitutional problems. I think that we're going to find it challenged immediately. And I'm also concerned that if you think about what's likely to happen with this thing, we clearly can't go into everyone's home and inspect and decide whether or not they're living up to the terms of this particular ill-formed law. And so what will happen is either one of two things. Either it will not be enforced, or it will be selectively enforced. And I think that will give the police a certain amount of discretionary abuse of power that I just don't wish us to grant the police. So.
Don Lowell also voted no on the resolution, but six assembly members voted yes. Donna Gilbert was one of them, disagreeing with both Gillum and Davies on their points.
The Attorney General, Douglas Bailey, has squelched that rumor. He stated unequivocally that language in the initiative changes nothing as to current Alaska law as to searches and seizures. Now, I guess I get very offended by everybody saying, well, you know, it's okay to have a little bit of marijuana in your house. Why not a little bit of cocaine then, Mr. Davies, and a little bit of heroin and a little bit of this and a little bit of that? I mean, why be selective in the drug of choices to have a little bit of in your home? This is not just sending a message. The only way you can get marijuana to your home is through illegal means. And I think it's time that we respect our laws and what they stand for.
The resolution in support of ballot measure number 2 passed on a vote of 6-3. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3-2-1. Supporters and opponents of the ballot measure greeted Bennett this morning at the Alaska Land Civic Center. Bennett is in Alaska at the request of Senator Frank Murkowski and others who want the ballot initiative to pass. His visit is giving the state's liberal marijuana possession law more attention. But speaking at a news conference this morning, Bennett said that's not necessarily a bad thing.
To the pothead community, Alaska is no great secret. I mean, Alaska has got a kind of most favored state status in High Times magazine already. It's already known to that part of the argument. Let's let the rest of America know about the situation in Alaska, and you might see more support for Proposition 2 coming from the other 48.
Bennett says one thing he's learned as the nation's top drug official is that where you apply pressure, things move, and where you release pressure, things move back. He says when California cracks down on drugs, the problems move north to Oregon, where laws aren't as tough. And even though Alaska isn't as easy to get to, Bennett says the problems are still here.
The advantage that Alaska has vis-a-vis the other, the 48, is that there are logistical problems because of distance. It's easier to move up Interstate 5 than to move from Oregon or Washington to Alaska. The distance is great, but surely Alaskans know that there's movement from the 48 to Alaska.
Bennett says he wouldn't describe the crowd he met in either Anchorage or Fairbanks as hostile, even though there were opponents to his message in both places. And he says he's not telling Alaskans what to do. He's just telling them what he thinks. But Bennett thinks the marijuana ballot measure is worth the trip to Alaska.
It's one of 1,000 fronts in this war. I think it's very important symbolically in terms of the changing tide, what we see, the shift in sentiment against drugs. But quite apart from symbols, in terms of the national effort, I think for Alaska it's important because I fear that if Alaskans don't support Proposition 2, the state will be perceived as a marijuana mecca, and more trouble will then lie ahead for Alaska.
Next month, Alaska voters will decide whether any possession of marijuana should be a criminal offense. Under state law currently, the state constitution's right to privacy allows for possession of up to 4 ounces for private use. Last night, the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly passed a resolution urging voters to support the ballot proposition to recriminalize the drug. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3-2-1. Presenting a unified voice or cutting the budget. If one of those is what you want from your state house representative, then the choice in District 20A may be easy. One-term incumbent Bert Sharp is being challenged by Franklin Eagle. Eagle says Sharp's maverick stand in relation to the rest of the Interior delegation is the reason he's running.
I'm running specifically because Representative Sharp has been the lone wolf on too many votes for legislation that was very beneficial to the Interior. The capital budget alone this year is it's a bill that everybody looks at the entire session. It's a bill that takes months of negotiation and compromise and communication and coordination. Representative Sharp was the only legislator who voted against virtually $300 million worth of projects for the Interior. It was not a partisan vote. Mike Miller voted for it. Steve Frank voted for it. This was a bill that was good for the Interior. And being a lone wolf on not only that bill, but many other bills relating to the oil spill and to the needs of the citizens of the state of Alaska, not just the Interior, Representative Sharp has been out on his own. I believe I can bring a sense of unity to the entire Interior delegation, make it stronger, and we can go back and finally be a distinct bloc that represents the Interior as opposed to all the other forces of the other legislative people around the state.
Sharp is Fairbanks' only Republican House member, voting with the Interior delegation on some issues and with the minority on some issues. But when it comes to state spending, Sharp says he'll continue to play that role.
I wasn't the only legislator to vote against the capital budget. There was 15 others, as a matter of fact, and that vote was taken with less than 2 minutes left in the legislative session. It was on a capital addition, a capital budget that was over $500 million. When it left the House, the last time any of us had seen it, it was 75 pages long. When it came back from the Senate, it was 123 pages long, and nobody, not one member of the 40-member House, had a copy of that bill in front of them when they were called to vote on it with less than 2 minutes to go. So if that's who, is that the way you want to vote on legislation, on that size of money bill, without knowing what you've got in there, by all means, consider another candidate besides me. But I was sent down there to represent the people of Alaska that expect not business as usual, but scrutiny of every dollar spent down there.
Sharp and Eagle agree on next year's funding priorities for the Interior. Both say funding for education and Denali Center are at the top. Both men also support passage of the budget reserve amendment on next month's ballot, but they differ on the marijuana recriminalization issue. Sharp is for it. Eagle says he's not. And while Sharp supports a limit on legislative terms, Eagle says he's not sure that's necessary. Frank Eagle is co-owner of a Fairbanks restaurant, while Bert Sharp is retired from Golden Valley Electric Association. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3-2-1. 2 years ago, the race ended in a vote so close there was a recount. This year, Urban Ray Hoy again wants Boyer's job in Juneau. Ray Hoy and Boyer both say Denali Center funding will be their top priority in the next session. Boyer also wants to find funding for a new public health facility and UAF maintenance work. Boyer thinks revenue the state may see because of the recent jump in oil prices could help with maintenance projects as well as long-term budget concerns.
If we end up in a situation where we have additional revenues that do accrue to the state beyond our immediate operating capital needs, we ought to set up a capital budget account that allows us to fund capital maintenance needs in the years ahead and not have to compete with capital dollars. But I also support and I co-sponsored a bill to create the budget reserve fund, and I also co-sponsored a bill with Mike Davis to allow for the excess or the revenues that would come to the state as a result of settling lawsuits with the oil companies to accrue to that budget reserve account. I'd like to see that budget reserve account at some point in the future become the real permanent fund, the operating permanent fund that we intended when we created the original permanent fund. It's one way, and it's only a small way, of beginning to fill that budget gap that we know is inevitable, that we know is out there, and it's looming. And you can't, I don't think, realistically expect that you can cut $300 to $500 or $600 million out of the budget, even over a 4 or 5 year year period of time, without incredible disruptions in the economy. So we've got to find ways to plug that gap, and I think that the budget reserve fund, if we can capitalize it intensively enough, can be a part of that filling the budget gap.
Boyer says his priority for legislation will be requiring a health and personal safety curriculum in schools to teach about alcohol and drug abuse. The Republican in the race, Urban Ray Hoy, says he has the common sense to make things work and will use a common sense approach in Juneau to get government back in line.
I think the state government should get to the size that it should be. And my formula for the size of state government would be, if there was no oil money, and we were all working like we are, and we had to pay the support of the government, how much government would there be? And when government gets to that point, then they can talk about using this money and start income taxes or any other thing.
Ray Hoy also supports a limit on legislative terms and thinks the state should join in the subsistence lawsuit filed in federal court. The 71-year-old Ray Hoy is self-employed, while the Democratic incumbent Mark Boyer is a laborer who has served 4 years in the state house. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. Tom Moyer and Rose Rabacek have been on the campaign trail since before the primary. Independent Republican Merrick Pierce also joined the race to replace Mike Davis in the Alaska State House. While the candidates agree on some issues, there are several things the three don't agree on. One of those things is abortion. Moyer says he is firmly pro-choice. Pierce says he personally doesn't like abortion, but as a legislator would support a woman's right to choose. Republican Rose Rabacek isn't pro-choice and believes abortion is something that must be discussed.
In order to solve the abortion problem, we need to start looking at the issues, and we need to talk about it. A lot of times we hide behind labels. One group says I'm pro-life, the other group says I'm pro-choice, and we talk no further. I think we need to start looking at exactly what we're talking about. I don't think that abortion should be performed in the eighth month, and I don't think that very many other people think so either. Is that what pro-choice means? Well, it does to some people, and to others it doesn't. So I think we need to start looking at the issues.
Rabacek has other priorities, though. The first is to get the budget under control. She'd like to reduce the number of state employees, particularly in the governor's office. Rabacek also supports a hiring freeze. Her other main issue is encouraging resource development. Rabacek believes the state doesn't encourage adequate development of the abundant natural resources in Alaska. She also believes that the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge can be safely drilled for oil. Merrick Pierce disagrees. He's one state candidate who does not support oil drilling in the refuge, saying the oil companies can't be trusted to do it right. Pierce says his top priority if elected will be ethics reform. He calls his opponents hypocrites for taking money from special interest groups and says he's the only candidate who plans to work for the people.
Listening to the voters, I'm finding that the overwhelming majority of people out there are asking for real, substantive ethics reform. 67% of the voters are saying, for example, that they want to see a ban on special interest contributions. So that would be one of my first priorities, is to ban the special interest contributions so we have the legislature working for the people instead of the special interests. We also need to ban free gifts. Currently, our legislators can accept free gifts up to $50 in value. I maintain that a bribe does not have to be in cash. I'd also like to limit the number of terms that a legislator can serve so that we get a nice turnover of representatives with a nice turnover of new ideas.
Unlike most other candidates, Denali Center is not Pierce's top priority for capital funds. He says road maintenance is more important to the people in District 19. Pierce also would like to move the legislature out of Juneau and eliminate license plate renewal fees. Of the three candidates in the race, Tom Moyer is the only one supporting the budget reserve amendment that's on next week's ballot. Rabacek thinks unexpected state dollars should be used to forward fund the budget. Pierce says that money should go to the permanent fund, calling the budget reserve idea a slush fund for legislators. But Tom Moyer says a quarter of any windfall revenues from oil companies will go to the permanent fund anyway. He believes the budget reserve will allow the state to even out the valleys and peaks of oil prices affecting the state budget. A former legislative aide, Moyer says he won't need any on-the-job training if elected. He says his priorities would be stabilizing the state budget and creating a more constructive atmosphere in Juneau to do that.
We need to require the passage of a bill that would require a deadline for bills that are not related to finance. In other words, we need to have the time at the end of session to deal rationally with the budget. Too often there's a gridlock at the end of session as non-finance bills and finance bills pile up. If we had this passage of the deadline, we would have that time to work on the budget as well as to work on compromises for non-budget related bills. Too often budget bills are slam dunk at the end of session, and that's not good budget making.
Moyer also says he would make replacing Denali Center a top capital priority if elected. The three candidates are running in a district which covers Esther, Fort Wainwright, and areas north and east of Fairbanks, running all the way to the Canadian border. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. Kopanen and Bennett are in an agreeable race for State House. The two are running straightforward campaigns for office and agree on many issues. Both support funding for a long-term health care facility in the interior. Both support the budget reserve amendment on next week's ballot, but neither one wants to recriminalize marijuana. Bennett and Kopanen are both pro-choice on the issue of abortion, and both would be willing to support a limit on legislative terms. One of the areas of disagreement is on subsistence. In the legislature this year, Kopanen supported putting a constitutional amendment before the voters, and he still does.
I think that the question is so important that it has to be decided by the citizens of the state of Alaska. I'd like to see a referendum, a constitutional referendum, with a firm discussion of all of the options in the public. I think the only way is for the public to decide.
Bennett, on the other hand, would prefer a court challenge.
We didn't have a subsistence problem before the feds gave us a subsistence problem. Our game boards managed it locally. I don't think we had a problem. I think we need to sue the federal government and get it cleared once and for all, get a good definition.
Also on Bennett's agenda is a comprehensive health plan for the state, and she'd like to work on a state spending plan, saying budgets are out of sight. Kopanen says he'll continue working on funding for education and the university system, along with money for maintenance of public buildings. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Ethics in the state budget, or roads and education? Those are high on the list of at least one of the three candidates in House District 17. Both of the challengers say change is what the district needs. Independent candidate Billy Williams.
My opponent's had 8 years to get the job done, and as I go around the district, I find that people are pretty disgruntled with state government in general. And probably over half the people I've met say they're ready for a change in our state legislature in District 17. So just the voice I'm hearing as I campaign tells me it's time for a change. For the last 15 or 16 years that I can document, either through his time in the legislature or his job as a teacher, Mr. Schultz has received a paycheck from the government side of our society. He has a safety net there that's going to help him no matter what private enterprise he takes out on. I work construction. There's no work, I don't work. I own a little roadhouse. Nobody helped me. I got no small business loan or anything to start that business. I either sink or swim with the private economy, and I think there's a basic difference in our philosophies on government because of that. And I'll take that private sector, the health of the private individual's economy, into my seat if I'm elected.
Williams says his loyalty will be to the residents of the district and says basics like schools and roads need attention from the state. Ruby John wants to do something about the state budget and ethics, and she also thinks she can do a better job than Dick Schultz.
I think the people of District 17, in fact, do need a change, but not only that, I think they need a change to have a person, in fact, representing them. They need a worker, and I happen to be willing to give up a lot of my personal life to get into the public life to become their worker.
Ruby John also says if elected, she would fight for a subsistence preference in hunting and fishing. Incumbent Dick Schultz has been challenged on his position over subsistence, since he opposed putting an amendment on the ballot for voters to have that choice.
I did not vote against subsistence in general. As a matter of fact, the subsistence issue never even came up. Talking about avoiding the issue, what happened, the present administration would not allow the subsistence issue to be placed before us for a vote. All we talked about was changing the Constitution of the state of Alaska. So we talked about. They would not allow us to talk about challenging the federal government, which we wanted to do. They would not allow us to talk about other issues, which we wanted to do. The only thing that we were allowed to vote on was a constitutional amendment to put before the voters when the big decision hadn't been decided. Is it constitutional under the United States Constitution? And I voted on the right side of the issue. I voted to uphold the state of Alaska's constitution. I would vote that manner again.
Schultz says his two biggest priorities for the district, if elected, remain the same, working to forward fund education and making sure roads are adequately maintained and safe. Schultz does not support the budget reserve amendment. He'd rather see windfall revenue from higher oil prices go to forward fund education. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. 4. It may have come as no surprise to those who attended this year's conference, but women are finding that they can help themselves by helping each other. Co-chairperson of the Alaska Women in Business Conference, Kathleen Dove.
We need a network for women
not only in the interior but across the state. We all do believe that there's a very strong network for men in this town and in this state, and we want to develop that same system for women. We want to encourage women to do business with other women.
It wasn't just networking that took place Saturday. About two dozen women sat in on a session called Getting to Know Your Customer. Instructor Laura Milner explained the keys to marketing your products or business for the best results.
Customer satisfaction and targeting. Picking out that group that you're going to go after them, and make sure that they're happy.
And after the hour and a half session, Anne Boudreau of Anchorage already was happy she had come.
But I have to say that the presentation this morning taught me some new things. It also reminded me of some old things I had forgotten, so I think I got more than I bargained for.
Some of the sessions were for women business owners, things like accounting tips and advice on selecting a lawyer. For the female executive, there were sessions on networking, solving difficult problems, and speaking to a group. And for personal development, the conference brought in keynote speaker Marion Wingo, a counselor and writer who helps people understand themselves better. Wingo spoke to the group about motivation. Learning what motivates you is a key to success.
What, in terms of what you're doing right now, I would like to hear some responses of what is meaningful about the work itself. What is the payoff in, as far as the motivation part of what you're doing? How are you motivated by it? Absolutely.
Each of the women had their own reasons for attending the conference. For some, it was just good to share successes and stories.
Nowadays, people are finding out that women are doing a lot better than men in business because we have more patience and we don't spend as much money, and so it works out pretty good.
I'm a woman in business, and I feel that women are becoming more and more important to the business world, and they have better paying jobs, more jobs, they're more important to our workforce and our community, and I'd like to reach them and let them know what I'm doing in the business world and have them talk to me about what they're doing. It's a real exciting time to be in business in Fairbanks, Alaska.
When you come here and you see all the women that own their own business, it's quite surprising. You don't realize that there are as many women in there as there are, and I'm sure there's a lot more in town that we could get involved if they were aware of it and could get them to participate.
Co-chair Kathleen Dove would like to see the event continue.
The only way from here is up. It's great. We're looking forward to a truly statewide conference next year.
Dove says about 150 women registered for the conference. Most were from Alaska's interior. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one.
Somebody in this school has AIDS. You know who? It's TK.
You crazy, man.
No, Mr. Fleming told the principal, TK has AIDS. TK is a queer.
He is not a queer.
The show is Amazing Grace, which promises a frank, powerful look at something people don't like to talk about, AIDS. Some area high school students have already seen the play. Co-author of the show, Cordelia Anderson, says it presents HIV/AIDS in an explicit, but important way for kids.
All of our work kind of balances the negative with the positive messages. When we're talking about abusive use of sex, we also talk about healthy sexuality. And by 1986, we couldn't talk about risks inherent within sex without questions about AIDS coming up, or people being concerned if they're a victim, what's their chances of getting AIDS, and so on. So, plus, because we're committed to primary prevention, we deal with larger social issues like homophobia and racism and sexism and sexuality, and those are all quite relevant in dealing with AIDS.
The play Amazing Grace does more than just talk about AIDS. Anderson says other issues like homosexuality and death are explored too. The setting is a high school, where the rumor gets out that one of the kids in the school has AIDS.
How we gonna win with our quarterback gone?
He's been out 2 weeks, do you know what's wrong?
Oh, don't sweat it, he'll be okay. We ain't gonna win without TK. How we gonna win? What we gonna do?
It's got scenes in it that really center around one student who you never see on purpose. You never find out how he got the virus, and you never see him because he could be anyone. And that what centers on is they find out that he has AIDS, and how do his friends, how do his parents, how do the teachers deal with that, and what does that make everybody think of?
Since the subject of AIDS is still controversial, Anderson says problems have come up where the play is scheduled, but she's learned to take some of those things in stride. They don't surprise her. She's just come to expect them.
I think that if you're saying anything substantial, there's going to be somebody or a group of people who do not agree with you. But on balance, I think that a lot of people will see that what we're saying is important, and even though it may be a little jarring in that it's a little more explicit and deals with some topics they'd rather see not talked about, that it is necessary if the education's really going to be effective.
Anderson says the part of the show that generates the most reaction is a portion of the film where two men, one who is dying of AIDS, talk quietly about their relationship. And Eileen McGinnis, who helped bring Illusion Theater to Fairbanks, says it did get kids at Lathrop talking when the play was performed there Tuesday morning.
Kids were real impressed in how they didn't pull any punches on stage. They addressed it, and they addressed it in a way that was funny and fun to listen to, but also that they were very straightforward with the facts. And I think that really impressed a lot of the students. That final scene where they had Archie and Drew were talking, and a rather intimate moment there. And I know that, I was here this morning, kids were just hooting and hollering and catcalling and doing all sorts of stuff. And at first I was kind of like mad at them, but then it was interesting how the cast really dealt with that. Cordelia says she's met up with that a lot, and she just comes to expect it, partly because it's a real embarrassing moment. So I like the way that they handled it this morning. They just came out and they started talking about it and gave kids the opportunity to just start talking about, I'm not used to seeing this, or, I don't believe in that and stuff. And that's okay. It got everybody talking.
And some Lathrop students who saw the show also thought it was worthwhile.
I sort of felt uncomfortable with that last section of the... yes, the movie thingy. That was very interesting. I'm not prejudiced to gay people or anything, but just not something I really enjoy watching.
But the way they got the message across was so real. They really got me. You're sitting here in our choir, drama teacher would never, they'd be like, what, you want to do what? I was just really surprised at how honest and explicit they were and how frank. And I really respected that.
I thought it was great, because it was different, and you see, there was like humor to it, which was really good. Instead of being so serious about it, and it was, I think it was really expressive, and it was just great, and I think everybody should see it, should be exposed to see it, because you really learn a lot.
If they're an open-minded person, they should come see it, and if you're a closed-minded person, you should open up your mind and come see it anyways.
Illusion Theater presents Amazing Grace tonight at 8 o'clock at West Valley High School. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. The residents who drafted the proposal opted against property or sales taxes. Instead, the votes will be on a 2% utility tax and a 5% a ton tax on resources like coal. But the most important tax up for approval is a 4% tax on overnight accommodations. Linda Edgeworth with the State Division of Elections says that bed tax must pass for the borough to happen.
Approval of that question is a condition for incorporation, so unless there is a favorable vote on that tax issue, then the borough would not be able to incorporate, even if there was a majority vote in favor of incorporating the area. If the issue of incorporation is actually passed by the voters, they would also elect the initial mayor of the borough and 9 assembly members. So those are the issues that are going to be voted on at this election.
Names of candidates for those offices are also on the ballot. 6 people are running for mayor of the new borough. Assembly candidates will be elected from 3 borough election districts. Everything is set for tomorrow's election, except for approval from the U.S. Justice Department. Under the Federal Voting Rights Act, elections like this must be cleared by the Justice Department to ensure fair minority representation. State officials say they submitted all the information for that approval in plenty of time, but then found out there was a mistake in the description of the new borough. That change not only delayed the election 1 month, it also means it won't be given the necessary clearance until November 26th. That's 3 weeks after the election. Dan Bockhorst with the Alaska Department of Community and Regional Affairs says the state has asked for expedited clearance. Bockhorst is still hoping to hear something from the Department of Justice soon.
The Department of Justice has had very ample opportunity to conduct a pre-clearance review of this. Normally, 60 days is all that is required. In effect, they have had, in this case, 95 days to conduct the review. We are in touch with the Department of Justice, and they are currently working on it, and they have indicated to me that they will make an effort to have it pre-cleared before the election.
Bockhorst says even without that clearance, the Department of Justice can always intercede later on behalf of minorities' rights. And officials believe there's no reason to delay the vote. The Division of Elections, Linda Edgeworth, says the Justice Department knows that the election is scheduled for Tuesday and hasn't objected to it.
There was nothing in their response to our supplemental request to indicate that we were not to conduct the election. There was no implication or inference that the election should be halted. So we are proceeding with the election, and we are anticipating that pre-clearance will be forthcoming in a normal fashion.
Department of Justice officials say they can't comment on the specifics of the Denali Borough proposal, just to say that it's under review. But a spokeswoman says it's not the first time that this type of situation has come up. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1.
For Governor Hickel Coghill, 18,079. Noel Hensley, 16,000.
Supporters of new governor Wally Hickel dominated the crowd at the Westmark Tuesday night. The group found plenty to cheer about all evening. More than 13,000 votes for the Hickel-Coghill team came out of the Fairbanks region. That was nearly double the amount of votes for his nearest opponent, Tony Knowles. Local candidates didn't learn their outcomes for some time, though. Problems with vote counting here slowed things down. The race that presented the longest wait was in District 19. Three candidates wanted Mike Davis's old House seat. In the end, it went to a Democrat again. Tom Moyer gathered 48% of the vote. Rose Rabacek earned nearly 40%. An independent Republican candidate, Merrick Pierce, finished with more than 10% of the vote. Even through the long wait, Moyer was optimistic after he took over the lead with 75% of the precincts counted.
When they're coming in as slowly as they have tonight, it's a roller coaster. But after you've been campaigning for 5 months, what's a few more hours? Well, right now the math looks favorable towards me.
Those final precinct numbers came in after 2 a.m., and Moyer took them to finish on top in District 19. Other races also offered a long wait, but they weren't quite as close. In the state Senate campaign, incumbent Betty Fahrenkamp won again, beating Joe Ryan with 58% of the vote to Ryan's 41%. Going to serve her fourth term in the state Senate, Fahrenkamp was happy with the outcome, but not as happy with the tone of the campaign.
I'm pleased. I just hope that, you know, I've been really concerned about the change in type of campaigning we do here. And I hope that this kind of slows down that tear the other fellow apart type campaigning. I just don't think it works too well here.
Even though Fahrenkamp was the winner, Joe Ryan wasn't going home mad and denies any negative campaigning.
I've been accused of negative campaigning, which I have not, because I have not said one word about my opponent personally. But I have said a lot of things about where she stands on issues. And you may disagree with my dramatizations, but when you are trying to get something across, you have to get people's attention. I think I've run a pretty good campaign. It's been clean. The issues have been brought forward in our positions. I think everybody in this area pretty darn well knows where Joe Ryan stands and where Betty Fahrenkamp stands.
In another race that started and ended fairly quietly, Nilo Kopanin held on to his House District 21 seat. Bev Bennett earned 40% of the vote, but Kopanin will go on for a fifth term, getting 59% of the vote. Both candidates were happy with how their campaigns were conducted. Bev Bennett acknowledged that it was difficult to campaign as a Republican here, where independent candidate Wally Hickel is so popular.
The party did split into one camp or the other, and
if a local candidate came down on one side or the other, he lost part of the support of his party, or her party, as the case may be. And that put us all in a little awkward position. It eroded some of our base of support. Shouldn't have, but it did.
Bennett says she thinks the Republican Party will pull back together after this election. The victor in the House District 21 race, Nilo Kopanen, thinks Hickel's election will make for some interesting politics in Juneau next spring.
I think we're going to have, at the minimum, a three-party system. I cannot imagine, under any set of circumstances, Coghill and Dzerjulowski working in tandem. And I'm sure that it'll be reflected on the House. There'll be Dzerjulowski Republicans and Hickel Republicans, and there may be even some Hickel Democrats or independents. The Democrats are going to be able to organize a solid organization and pay attention to legislative business, and we'll see, let the governor and the Senate play their whatever games they want for a while.
In other races, Fairbanks voters supported Senator Ted Stevens heavily in his victory over Michael Beasley. And Don Young got 55% of the voters' support here, compared to John Devens' 44%. Statewide, Young narrowly defeated Devens. And 70% of the voters here supported the budget reserve amendment that passed. Voters here were also aligned with the rest of the state on the marijuana law. It passed here with 55% of the vote, the same support it got statewide. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting.
I think that the transition is going to be smooth and friendly.
And to guarantee that, Governor Steve Cooper says he plans to consult with the governor-elect on several major issues. The biggest one may be a pending lawsuit over back taxes the state is claiming from oil production at Prudhoe Bay. Cooper says there's a chance another settlement with one or two companies could be reached in the next few weeks. Even if that settlement stalls, the governor says the Amerada Hess case needs to be passed off cleanly to the Hickel administration.
Because we have put together a structure that is working and which is clearly headed for getting this litigation over and done with. And we think that the governor-elect needs to be briefed in detail on that litigation because it's very important. It involves hundreds of millions of dollars, arguably billions of dollars.
Beyond that tax dispute, Cooper says he'll have a new budget proposal for the Hickel administration to pore over and change at will, and some recommendations on how to approach settlement of the mental health lands trust dispute. There are some details, however, that just won't wait.
There are a couple of judicial appointments, one the Superior Court seat in Kodiak, the other is the District Court seat in Homer. They would be two of the appointments that I would want to consult with the governor-elect about.
Overall, says Cooper, he believes the transition team that Hickel is appointing to work with his administration on the takeover of state government will find a cordial welcome in his office.
Wally Hickel is a person with whom I have consulted on a regular basis for 4 years. I consider him to be a friend. I think the feeling is mutual. I know a lot of people who have been associated with Wally Hickel over the last several years. In fact, that's the first job I ever had in Alaska, working as an assistant district attorney when Wally was the governor before. So I think that the transition is going to be smooth and friendly, and that there will not be the difficulties that some people have suggested.
Governor Steve Cooper. In Juneau, I'm John Greeley.
AML does things for us, and probably equally important, it keeps things from being done to us. I'm sure you all know that the AML has been particularly active in trying to maintain a reasonable level of municipal assistance and revenue sharing, and that goes straight into your tax base to maintain services here in Fairbanks.
You make this sound almost to me like a form of blackmail, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. If we don't support the AML, they won't be coming to town next year. Am I hearing that correctly?
Well, I hope it doesn't sound like blackmail. I think that's interesting because that question was put to me 2 years ago when we were up here. But we are precluded, I believe. I better not say that. I don't know whether we're precluded under our bylaws from holding a meeting in a place where there is not membership. I best not say that, but I believe that the committee that makes the selection would certainly take that into consideration.
Well, for your information, Fairbanks and North Pole are members.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Okay, secondly, Ms. Flynn, do you think that it would be so unbeneficial for the North Star Borough to be out of AML for 1 year to see what we might accomplish on our own rather than being a part of things that we necessarily do not support in this borough, that we just put our name to and hear from our own legislative analyst that we pay between the borough and the school district to, by the way, $80,000 to spend her time having to straighten out things that our name appears on the bottom of for AML that we do not agree with. And when you get into some of the revenue sharing and municipal money is it coming back into the communities? It doesn't always
point
work.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. Is that a question?
Yes, it is, Mr. Lowell.
I presume there will be a question mark there pretty soon, right?
Well, there's been two or three question marks, and I'm giving her a general idea that I would like some answers to.
Okay. We'll assume that's a question.
Well, I think the first thing I heard you ask was, would it be beneficial for you to remain out of AML for 1 year? And obviously, that's a determination that you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I heard you speak to was that you apparently fund in toto or in part a legislative representative in concert with the school district. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
My own workings with your legislative representative in Juneau have been, frankly, very beneficial, and I think mutually beneficial between Anchorage and Fairbanks, between Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the rest of the state. That is, you are in fact making exactly my point. It is that cooperation, that mutual workings with one another that adds the strength to the program and benefits not only Fairbanks, but benefits much of the rest of the state.
But the point is, Ms. Flynn, that I've asked you, there are times that our name goes on to the bottom of things that this assembly has not put forward or this borough does not agree with. Would it not be better to at least give it an opportunity to see what our analyst, our $80,000 a year analyst, along with this assembly, can do for itself to concentrate on issues that are important to us, specifically to us, rather than pay these outrageous dues to AML and get one vote?
Well, I think, if I'm hearing what you're saying correctly, if there are things that your name has appeared on that you object to, it would seem to me it is much easier to remove what is objectionable or change that item from inside an organization rather than from outside an organization. But that is, of course, your choice.
It's what the organization is sponsoring that our name is on the bottom of, Ms. Flynn.
Is there something specific that you have in mind?
The Education Endowment would be a good example. This assembly voted not to support it. AML supports it.
You're answering questions from Ms.
Flynn.
Oh,
I'm sorry, you're correct.
Mr. Davies, are you finished, Ms. Gilbert?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Davies?
I don't have any questions. I was just going to ask Ms. Flynn if she wanted to wrap up her comments.
Okay. Anyone else for Ms. Flynn?
Mr. Davies.
Seeing nothing, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. It's very nice to be here. And by the way, I personally didn't support the Education Endowment either.
Good for you.
But AML does.
No one else is signed up to testify to this this ordinance. Does anyone in the audience wish to come forward? Seeing none, public hearing is closed on the 9022L.
Move to adopt.
Second.
Discussion, Ms. Williams.
The Finance Committee recommended against this. I wanted to report that. I hope that's not at the moment.
Ms. Gilbert.
Well, as I have for, I believe this is 5 years now, I am going to speak against going into AML. I guess this particular issue bothers me at this time on our agenda. Because number one, our finance committee and this assembly voted down going into AML. We play games with the public. You know, we're at budget time, we're making these big moves, we're making it appear that we cut budgets, and then we sneak it back on and say, well, we're going to take this money back out and we're going to go into AML anyway, forget everybody else, and forget the vote of this assembly. The membership alone to this organization is, again, if I may remind you, just the membership, over $35,000. We get one vote to say, yes, we agree with this, or no, we disagree with this. AML needs to change some things with inside of that structure. It has the possibility of being a good organization. However, when you take the amount of membership that we pay, and that's only the beginning, as this assembly knows, it then goes on to all of our travel back and forth to these meetings, our hotel bills, our car bills, our food bills, and those of many other people in this assembly. The cost runs very rampant and very high. And we still have one vote. Collectively, the bush comes in, all these little tiny communities that pay $150, $250 to belong to AML, and they put their votes in as a group. We are not heard. We are not heard. One of the basic reasons I wanted to get out of this, not that I don't have belief that down the road, if it's changed somewhat, it could be beneficial. But until somebody has the courage to get out and say, look, this isn't good enough for us or the community and the people that we represent here, because we're not getting our fair share back for their money, this is not going to change. Everybody can sit here and say, well, we gave them a big scare, we threatened to pull out, and maybe this year we'll get it changed. That's baloney, guys, and you know it. The only way it's going to change is to pull out and have other communities do so that pay outrageous membership fees for their one vote and say, okay, now somehow we've got to make this a little bit more fair and make this stand for something. But it's not happening. And for us to vote this back in after it was voted out for at least a year, I think is a travesty, and I think it's, again, sticking it to our taxpayers, and I think we need to start looking at this. We voted this down, ladies and gentlemen, already this year, and now we see it come sneaking back in. I think we need to look at what we're doing here. Thank you.
Mr. Chismar.
Well, I'm taking a completely different look at what we're doing here than what Ms. Gilbert just stated. We owe it to our taxpayers to belong to AML. In fiscal year 1990, AML's opposition to a proposed 20% cut in municipal assistance, state shared revenue, brought in over $1 million to the Fairbanks North Star Borough.
So did our lobbyist, Paul.
Everybody else.
Exactly.
I'm bored. I'd not have a debate here. Let Mr. Chismar proceed.
Payment in lieu of taxes brought in $490,000 to this borough in 1990. In response to quizzing Heather about the host municipality, yes, the member must be in good standing of the league, means dues paid. And that's not in the bylaws, that's just in the host requirements. Just to wrap it up, I would say that we owe it to the Fairbanks North Star Borough to return to AML. If we don't return to AML, we'd get beaten up by the bush even more than we are now. Strength there are numbers. Thank you.
Mr. Lowell?
Yeah. 30 years ago, I was a member of the Seward City Council. We belonged to what was called then the League of Alaskan Cities, the forerunner of the League of that is now known, the Alaska Municipal League. It's a very fine organization. I've attended the meetings for a number of years, even when I didn't belong to the as a member of the city or a member of the assembly. The dues are not outrageous. It's a very fine organization. It provides, for one thing, new member training for new members of city councils, for the assembly. I noticed that Ms. Gilbert did not attend that training. Maybe she had. She'd had a better appreciation for some of the fine work that they do. They provide a lot of work that, in fact, we're paying a lot of money to a lobbyist to duplicate the work. Obviously, there's 128 of the city's 162 municipalities belong. That says something in itself. And that's really all I have to say, except I wish to thank Heather Flynn for taking the time to come up and speak to us on a very fine organization.
Ms. Gilbert?
Well, Ms. Gilbert didn't attend that meeting because she was unable to get there, Mr. Lowell, if you remember the correct procedure of what happened.
Excuses.
Mr. Lowell.
Yes, sir.
I believe Mr. Hull was on the same plane that never got there, Mr. Lowell.
Ms. Williams, or Gilbert.
But secondly, to what Mr. Chismar had to say about the amount of taxes and revenue sharing, or revenue sharing, I should be specific. Our lobbyists worked for that. We worked for that. Many members of this assembly paid to go to Juneau, not the members themselves, but the taxpayer, to lobby for that. And our lobbyist is the one that put her heart and soul out. Now, maybe what this assembly is suggesting is that we go into this cost of AML and drop our personal lobbyist. Mr. Lowell just stated that they're doing duplicate work. Maybe we don't need the two. Maybe they wish to go to that. I think this community is going to get cheated by it, because our lobbyist lobbies for the things that are important to Fairbanks, Alaska, in the North Star Borough. Now, AML, with or without us this year, contrary to what may be stated here tonight, they will proceed with the very same issues that they are going to, that they have noted right now, with or without us. But maybe, when it comes to the Rules Committee, something might get changed. And again, I believe we owe it a year. I cannot see the fear that everybody on this assembly that believes in this has got in being out of it for 1 year to see whether or not it's really beneficial to us and the taxpayers. Because it's the only way we're going to know is to get out of it and see what we can do and accomplish. And I think it's going to be more for this borough. Maybe that's what they're afraid of.
Mr. Bartos.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. AML provides one of the most powerful lobbyists in Juneau during the legislative session. That is Scott Burgess, the director of AML. Last year, I had the privilege of being a member of the AML Legislative Committee, and that committee met on several occasions, and we went as groups around to the office of each legislative person and lobbied for increased municipal assistance, along with Scott Burgess, along with our lobbyist, Linda Anderson. And due to the lobbying efforts there, we were successful. Reasons for staying in AML is quite simple. It brings in money. It is good for Fairbanks. The conference comes to Fairbanks once every 3 years, as we've already heard. Money coming into the private community for a one-week period that is not a... It runs on the second or third week of November, and if we're looking at bringing into this economy $650,000 during that 1 week period for a $35,000 investment in dues. Accomplishments of AML that have directly benefited the Fairbanks area: we got an increase in $1 million in municipal assistance and state share in revenue that probably would have been cut. AML has been a leading role in fighting for full entitlement funding for the school debt reimbursement and senior citizens, disabled veterans tax exemption programs. AML has worked to protect the Education Foundation program. Legislative efforts to cut 5% from the FY90 Foundation formula would have cost municipalities an estimated $46.5 million. AML has worked with the National Association of Counties to protect the federal payments in lieu of taxes, the PILT program, of which the Fairbanks North Star Borough has received over $490,000 in PILT funding for fiscal year 90. AML was instrumental in the rewrites of Title 29, especially in the area of elections, that makes it easier for local governments to administer elections and for the public to understand them. AML provides a number of member services, some of which they provide training for local newly elected officials. They provide a weekly legislative bulletin. AML has changed its constitution in 1989 to provide Fairbanks North Star Borough a seat on the AML Board of Directors. AML has been instigating the creation of a municipal investment pool, which will save this borough money and investment in the bond and insurance programs throughout the state. I think AML is a great investment for the community of the interior. If the borough is not a member of AML, it impacts the cities in North Pole and the city of Fairbanks. in that their dues will rise dramatically because the borough has pulled out. I think we would be losing out on a great deal of influence for the interior of Alaska if we get out of AML.
Ms. Williams?
Well, I think that the influence that we would lose is primarily with AML. Our core of common interest lies with the rail belt, with Matsu and Kenai boroughs, with the municipality of Anchorage, with the communities further north that may or may not be a borough if we ever get to count the ballots. Those places have similar problems and similar interests to the Fairbanks North Star borough. I would be interested in forming a rail belt municipal league, but not at a cost of $35,000 per membership. The $35,000 per membership is only the tip of the bucket. Underneath is a huge pile of money that goes for all kinds of travel and other expenses. I have to agree with Ms. Gilbert. I think that we can afford 1 year out. They will nonetheless hold their meeting in Fairbanks. They will continue to do their good work, the parts that we agree with. They will continue to do their good works, the parts we disagree with, whether or not we are in. And I suggest that we stand by our actions of this spring when we formed the budget and stay out for 1 year.
Mr. Lowell?
Well, I'm going to remind members of the assembly that we haven't held a rail belt meeting with the other municipalities along the rail belt because also some members of the assembly say it's a waste of money there too. And quite frankly, the AML is a special organization. It's the only one in the state that truly represents all municipalities. And we have a lot of things that we share in common. And it's those items that the league is pursuing and helping all of us. And sometimes we try to want special things. That's what our lobbyist does, is go after individual items that we want. But the league goes after and represents all cities. And I think it's a very fine investment. Not only that, but since the league was going to be meeting in Fairbanks, we give all of us the opportunity to go there without any travel cost for this one time. So if we were going to drop out for 1 year, this would not be the year to do it. Just get the convention up here, and so that we can all attend, take another look at it. And I'm for staying in. I'm also a member of the Finance Committee, and I certainly did not vote to not belong to the league.
Ms. Gilbert.
Well, I'd just like to cut a couple points real quick. Mr. Bartos talked about the dues to the city of North Pole and the city of Fairbanks. What I'd like to remind Mr. Bartos of is they will still not approach the $35,000 a year mark, Mr. Bartos. And keep in mind, the same taxpayers that have to pay this $35,000 will be paying less to keep Fairbanks and North Pole in it, so it will be a savings to them. Even though the individual cities will go up, these same people right here, Mr. Bartos, pay the bill. So instead of $35,000, they will be paying less to belong, and two cities will then belong. So it's a money saver, if you want to get technical. Second of all, you talk about the meeting for the new candidates. My gosh, guess who the honcho is that teaches our candidates? Our own clerk. She's that good that she goes down there and she's in charge of that. She meets with the candidates to prepare them. So we could do the same thing right here and it wouldn't cost a thing. We've got our own clerk who they happen to think is just good enough to teach the rest of the state. So we can save some money there too, Mr. Bartos. And as far as a rail belt thing, Mr. Lowell, the reason, what Ms. Williams said, is to form one that makes sense. And we could be a leader in doing that, to involve the rail belt area and form a coalition. What was set up that we went to one time, really it wasn't much of anything. It just kind of came together and went apart. And we know that it was just an argument to see who was going to steal the most of the rail belt money. So that wasn't a coalition. So we form one and we make some sense out of it. And we work for these lovely people out here that pay the bills. And with that, I'm done for the night, guys.
Mr. Davies?
Well, I would speak in favor of this.
She does say she's done it tonight.
There's nothing. I heard that.